Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Carulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Oh, Eddie.
Yes.
Pence.
What's up?
How are you? I haven't seen you in 3 weeks.
I've been away.
You've been just neglecting your brown friend completely.
I don't see color.
Well, you should check your shorts. No, I'm just kidding. How was your vacation?
It was fine. It was hot. I was in the South.
Where were you in the South?
Myrtle Beach, South Carolina.
Oh, nice. That's awesome.
Nice.
Well,
Dirty Myrtle.
Well, is that the nickname for
yes.
it?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It's called
But
Dirt,
I mean, I guess
Dirty
I always
Myrtle.
Thought Myrtle Beach was like the MTV spring break cool happening.
No. It's like the, I don't know how to describe it.
Well, I think the only place I've been to in South Carolina is Hilton Head.
That's nice.
Awesome. So I just assume that, but I've heard South Carolina is awesome. Like other parts
the beaches
of it.
Are beautiful.
Yeah.
Beaches
so,
are beautiful. So it's just 95% humidity.
Yes.
And 95 well, degrees.
That's the, but
so
but
soon
the
you walk outside.
Nice.
You start sweating. Yeah, the water's like bath water.
Yeah, the water's amazing.
Well, it's the Atlantic's warmer than the Pacific anyway. Pacific's yeah. freezing cold.
Did you go into the water?
Like ankle deep.
There's
That's
sharks.
It? There's sharks, man.
Really?
Yes.
I thought the sharks were over here because the
no.
water... Really? They're more over there?
Yes.
So you were scared?
Yes.
You know, it's funny.
Have you ever seen the aerial helicopter views they do
yeah,
over the coastline?
That's scary.
That's usually where they do
like,
them from.
Really?
From North Carolina to Florida. That's where they usually do those helicopter
no
shots.
No fun. That does not sound like fun. I'm sorry.
Not doing that.
I've gone swimming in some of the Gulf Shore beaches, and there was a stingray. And I'd never seen this before, but they launch out of water. They
uh-huh.
can launch out of the water about 10, 15 feet. And I was just sitting there fascinated by it, just floating, you know, in the water. And I come in and I'm like, hey, Bonnie, did you see that stingray just launch? She's like, yeah, they usually do that when sharks are in the water. And I was like, what?
Mm.
She's like, yeah, they usually launch up because they feel like there's a predator in the water. And I was as close to
maybe
one
they thought
as,
you were the predator.
Maybe. But no, usually they, because they're only looking down, you know? I've missed you, is what I'm trying to say.
I don't know how you're
you were the
say
stingray
it.
In my life, Eddie. And I've missed. How was your 4th of July?
I was in Myrtle Beach.
Did you light any fireworks? Can you light fireworks?
Yes, there? That's a great thing about South Carolina. Everything's legal.
Everything? Or just fireworks?
Fireworks-wise. All other things you would want in life are illegal there.
Okay, but well, that's good.
Fireworks are totally legal.
So what was the best firework that you lit?
This thing called a... it's this big, round, red thing. It's about the size of like a... One of those like Folgers crystals, like tin can things.
Right. Oh my God. That's like a big one.
Yeah, it just says kick ass on it. Like in big white letters, just kick ass all the way around.
Who bought that one? Were you just like, I got to get
my
that?
My cousin.
So you just lit it and didn't know what it was going to do?
Yeah, you just light, most of those things you just light, you run as fast as you can
right.
until you start hearing it, and then you turn around.
And then what did it do?
Just shot 30 lights up in the air and poof, poof.
That's nuts.
Like 20 feet. Like, they're real honest-to-God fireworks. And they have these other things called mortars, where it's like this big tube, and it's like this ball, and you drop it down in there. It's got this big wick, and you light the wick, and then it goes, phoom, and it just, it's like,
it's like a cartoon, man.
They call it a 10-foot umbrella. That's the, and then we try to blow up fruit.
Oh,
we had a,
you got real imbecile.
We had a potato, and so we put an M80 in the potato. And then we light it and we throw it out there. But all it did was just blow the potato into two pieces. So it didn't do the explosion because potatoes are dense.
Yes.
You need like
yeah,
you need fruit
light.
That flies apart.
Yeah, like a watermelon or
and
something.
And we told my one other cousin who's a moron, we're like, he's driving home from work. I'm like, yeah, get some fruit so we can blow it up. Because we have a
And he came back with a bag of potatoes?
We have a big slingshot where like one guy holds one end, yeah. the other guy holds the other end, and the other one up and hold it, you fire things like it goes like 100 yards.
Where did you do all this?
In my parents' backyard. Wow. So they're on a golf course, so it's just
Oh, that's awesome.
And so we have like the slingshot. We're like, get some fruit so we can blow up on the way home. The dumbass comes home with a watermelon.
Well, I mean, that could be fun for...
No, you know, you need dynamite to blow up watermelon.
Well, that's true.
Not
that's
M80s. True. And you can't put it in the slingshot. And he knew that.
So he didn't want you to. He sabotaged.
No, he got home. He's like, oh, yeah.
He's like, I didn't think about that. That sucks. Well, at least you had some good parental activity with your boy Colton. Was he excited?
He likes water. He doesn't like... He does sparklers. I mean, he's 8. Okay. I'm not going to let him bite.
All right.
I'm not gonna lose his hand at that age.
Yeah, no, yeah, I get it. This is the first year actually. I did so much traveling that I just came home and I was.
You did Summerfest, right?
Oh man, I had one of the best weeks.
That's why I haven't talked to you. You did it.
I did a Arroyo Seco.
Yeah, Seco thing, and then you did Summerfest.
And you know what was cool about Arroyo Seco? So I dedicated our performance. My best friend passed away in August, so I dedicated before we played a note. I dedicated the performance to him. And a couple people that knew him in the audience like had their fists in the air. But you know, the funny thing is, as soon as I said that, I didn't realize all of a sudden I was about to well up in tears. So like the band is playing and I'm like, oh, I'm going to take a little bit longer to start this song. So I mean, the audience didn't know. But the response was amazing. We played with a five-piece horn section. We had a DJ scratching. We had a slide guitarist. I mean, it was bitching. And the way they took care of us, our dressing rooms were the Rose Bowl suites looking into the Rose Bowl.
Oh, wow. So that's cool. So you could see the festival happening.
You could see the festival from your dressing room. And then, well, it wasn't at all in the Rose Bowl.
Did you put a can of
ham? So the Rose Bowl was empty.
On the window?
So people actually went and played football. No, I didn't do that. People were playing football on the Rose Bowl field and stuff. I wish I'd known that that was going to be an option that we could do. But you could see the festival and the grounds around it. And the other cool part was every dressing room was, you were next to like a huge band. So like we were next to the Shins, we were next to the Revivalists, we were next to Galactic, all these like bands that were playing this festival. So you're just like hanging out with all these bands walking around. And then it was pretty incredible. I met G-Love. Do you know G-Love in Special Sauce?
Yeah.
So I got to tell G-Love, he played right after us, and I was like, yo man, your record Philadelphonic made me want to be in a band. He's like, oh cool man, what kind of band? I said, oh, we just played earlier. And he's like, were you the band with the horns? I was like, yeah. He's like, funkiest band I've ever heard, man. I was like, thanks, man. That's all because of Philadelphonic. No, but that was one of the records that actually really made me want to be in a band. But
that's cool.
So then I flew to Minnesota, and I went on an amazing tour of Paisley Park.
I saw your pictures.
Dude, that place was so... It was fucking badass. It was amazing on all levels that you could experience. There were three studios. We went to all three studios. We saw a bunch of his music rooms, pedal boards, guitars, outfits. His ashes were there, so you could
put respect
to his ashes, which was crazy.
That's such a Prince thing to do.
Yeah, it was. It really was.
Such a Prince thing to do.
His ping pong
respects
table
to me after I'm dead. Everyone
well, you know what? Here. They said that he built it because he wanted it to be a modern-day Graceland. And he really...
That's a Prince thing to do.
And I've done the Graceland tour. It's a better tour than the Graceland tour. But, you know, you're like, it's not as big as Elvis in some ways, but you got to play ping pong on his ping pong table, which I thought was awesome. And you could only take one picture in there that they, you know, took. And then
why did they say why?
Because
they want people to go.
He's always been like that anyways with his music and just like protecting the copyright. So as soon as I walked in, they're like, "Do you have a phone?" I'm like, "Of course." They're like, "Turn it off." And they put it in this little contraption that, you know, it's like when you buy a shirt at the department stores, it's like locked.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like locked in like a little, you know, little box like that. So then we went to he had like a stage area in his house that he would put on concerts and a club too. So they explained all of that. And then we saw his motorcycles, his Oscars, his cars, more outfits. They took out his basketball court, which I wish they didn't, to put some of his like cars and motorcycles in and stuff. And then at the very end, his chefs that worked at the, you know, at Paisley Park had a menu of stuff that Prince used to eat all the time that he would always have in his fridge or he'd ask them to make. So you could order stuff. And then there was a gift shop. And as I walked out of the gift shop, it started raining. It was sunny when I walked in. It was totally raining by the time I left.
Mm.
And then the whole day I went to like First Avenue, the club where they shot Purple Rain. It was just, the whole experience was just over the top. It was incredible. And then We opened up for Ziggy Marley a couple days later. I went to Chicago for a night and just hung out with a couple blues artists. That was awesome. And then the next night, the band flew in and we opened for Ziggy Marley. We played in front of 10,000 people.
That's nuts.
It was unbelievable. Ziggy invited us to onto his tour bus. We got to hang with him on the tour bus. It was just, everything about it was unbelievable. And then we came home and I just didn't want to do anything for 4th of July. So it was very mellow and very nice. And
that's pretty cool.
It was. I was tired of traveling, but it was a good. It was a good week. But I missed you, man. I did miss you. You're like, you're lying. You're giving me the,
you were
the eyes.
You were Paisley Park. You're like, Why would you miss me?
Well, I mean, that was something that
I was lighting off illegal fireworks.
Honestly, you got to see it because it's just, it's it's something that is, if you're a Prince fan, it's awesome. If
that's
you're
one
not
that's
even
the
Prince
only
fan,
state I've
awesome.
Never been to, Minnesota.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
It's cool. Minneapolis is
I've
awesome.
Been to all 49 states. I haven't been to Minnesota.
Well, you know the map. You have the map to prove it. Now you have to.
And I know how to abbreviate all of them, too.
Dude, you've been to all
the
50
states. I know where
all the
states are.
Well, you missed one of the abbreviations when we did that.
You knew like 12 of the states.
I knew about 20.
And you had no idea where they went.
You missed one. I remember. You missed one, buddy.
I missed one. I think I did Maine was M-A instead of M-I or
something
like that.
Yeah, it's okay. It's okay. Anyways, I think we have a very special guest. Let's bring her in. Miss Stephanie Burns. Oh! Oh! Our studio audience loves you already. How are you, Steph? Say hello.
Stephanie.
Coming with some pizzazz. I wore my Prince shirt from Paisley Park because I'm like, Steph is a huge Prince fan herself.
Yes.
And it was, I thought of you actually because we went into Studio 54 for New Year's Eve a long time ago, and 1999 was the song they played when the, that was awesome. Anyways.
That was, I think, my favorite New Year's.
Yeah, me too. It was, it was like awesome.
It was the best.
Yes.
Was it going into 2000?
It was going into 1999.
Right.
Going into 1999.
Oh, going into 99.
And they played that song, and it was just like,
right,
you know, we kind of grew up with that song in the 80s as kids, but to have it be a New Year's song was, it was over the top. So, anyways, I've known Steph since we were in first grade at Hugo Reed Elementary, or Hugo Reed Primary.
Primary.
Mrs. Kerger's class. That's right. Anyways, Steph, you've been doing a lot of cool stuff in the industry for a long time. Let's start with...
Yeah, where do we start?
Let's start in the roots. Okay, yeah. we'll move a little bit past five years old. But what was the thing that made you want to be involved in the industry in the first place?
Oh, gosh. Well, I didn't. I mean, my family did it. My sister did it. And so I think I kind of fell into it accidentally. It was a commercial audition that Jen had, my sister, and I was in the waiting room playing with some toys or whatever, and they picked me. And they were like...
Like, what about you? I'm sure that look, she must have been like...
And my sister and I hate each other ever since. No, so that just happened that way, and that's kind of how it started. And then... Yeah, kind of went from there. They did plays in high school.
That's right.
I did plays.
We did Bye Bye Birdie together.
Mm-hmm.
It was a great production,
Ursula,
actually.
Ursula, and who are you?
I was Albert.
Albert.
High five.
Nice.
Good times.
Yes. You guys remember any scenes?
Kim McAfee. What do you mean you resigned from the fan club? I mean, just because Hugo Peabody gave you... I'm kidding.
I was like, damn, that's pretty good.
How do I not remember how I got here?
Yeah.
I don't remember most phone numbers. You remembered your dialogue from
1993. Totally. I know. It's weird.
That's awesome. So you got into plays. What was the commercial? I remember you one time in first grade, not to bring up something from 5 years old, but you came in and you were like, I just did a commercial. And I was like, yeah, right. And you were like, it was a Winchell's commercial. I promise. I've got crumbs on my finger. And I was like,
she does.
You did. You
no,
did.
I
yeah,
didn't.
You did some like,
really?
It was like some, I think it was an oatmeal commercial, but you said it was like
a Winchell's donut commercial.
Yeah, did you ever do a donut commercial?
No, Jen did a donut commercial.
Ah, that's what it was.
I did an ALL commercial and got fired. Because.
Why'd you get fired?
I got fired because we were at a park and we had an ice cream cone.
How old were you?
Oh, gosh. Five, six. Yeah, one of those.
Were they like, Steph, we need to bring you in.
They were like, we need you to take this ice cream cone and like drop it on your chest to be like, oh no, like there's a dirty ice cream cone. And I couldn't, I was like, no.
Like, why? No, I'm going to get spanked.
Why would I waste good ice cream?
Yeah, why would I waste good ice cream? And they kept trying and trying and trying, and finally they were like, all right, let's get another kid in here.
Wow. Really? That's the 80s. Some guy smoking a cigarette. Get another kid in
here. Get her out of here. No, but that's why, I mean, that's why they hire more than one kid, you
right.
know, on sets, you know, because, well, for many reasons.
You think there was a kid just like watching and like, I could totally do that way better. Totally. In the wings.
Yeah, for sure.
So you did a lot of commercials as a kid, and then you were doing plays. And then I think you studied theater in college, too, right?
I got a
right?
B.A. ASU. in theater, yep, ASU. It's Big theater school, big theater.
Well, you know what? It doesn't matter. Like, yeah, honestly, the best classes I've ever had have been the smallest.
But you know what's really stupid is that, I mean, not that I'm knocking, you know, degrees because you should have one, but it's like in theater at the college, they just teach you how to run a theater. You know what I mean? Like, how is that?
You're not going to make it as an actor, but you're going to want to open a black box theater when you get out.
It's going to be amazing, you know?
And struggle to make rent.
Yeah, it's like, what? I mean, now probably in the film school and things like that, they probably teach you, you know, other things, but they don't teach you how to be an agent or be a casting director or, you know, anything like that.
I went to film school and they teach you how to make a movie, like how to write, how to light a movie, like all the techno aspects, not how to get your movie sold.
Right. That's another thing.
Not how to get financing. Not how to get financing for your movie. That's a whole different, like, that you have to take, like, you have to take, like, distribution of, like, the producing program. If you're in the directing program, they don't do it. Totally. They don't touch on any of that.
Yeah, I learned everything on how to make a costume for, like, a Peter Pan, you know? And it's like, I'm sorry.
Like, how am I going to make a living doing this? The drama teacher always chooses some obscure play. Like, I'm always like, why don't they do something that's, like, well-known? Right. There are a lot of plays that I think I've done in my life where I've never seen them on Broadway or in a theater bigger than
weird,
maybe 20 people.
Like weird, like Trippy Mod, or just weird. Yeah, I think we did Measure for Measure and one other one.
Oh, a classic.
just I don't know, some guy wrote it. I don't know who that is. But, so I did that. And then I moved back to L.A. In 2001 to have the acting career and do the whole, oh, my God, I'm going to be an actor.
Mm.
Yeah, and then that's not fun if you don't enjoy auditioning.
It's brutal.
Eddie and I always talk about it. Eddie's an actor as well, so he goes through the trials.
Well, let me tell you gotta love auditioning, and you have to love...
That part sucks.
Right, well, that's all you're doing for a long time. And then you have to be cool with rejection and be okay with it. And then you also have to have a very steady mind when it comes to holy crap moments that are almost... And then you lose it.
Yeah.
And so it's like there's so many panic attack moments where it's like the biggest roller coaster where it's like you have to learn to just be even.
Yeah. You have to learn to numb yourself.
Totally. Yeah. And just
from any highs and any lows.
Totally. And it's like it's so nerve wracking.
And then people are like, what's wrong with you? I'm like, you don't understand. I've fried my nervous system.
Right. Yeah. It's like, yeah.
I always think of the kid that was in Back to the Future that got recasted with Michael J. Fox. Like, he's like, Mom, Dad, I got the part. I'm going to be the... Okay, it's not going to be with me.
Well, no, they shot half that movie with him.
I know. That's what I mean. Like, and then it gets yanked from you. It's like,
The guy in The New Girl, he was in the pilot, and then they replaced him, and then they brought him back. So, hey, win-win.
Or what's the face of who... Matt LeBlanc's character in Friends, he wasn't in the pilot. Matt LeBlanc wasn't in the pilot. Somebody else was, and then he got... Can you imagine that? That's...
I mean, I don't even want to...
Hundreds of millions of dollars.
I know.
That's crazy.
It's really crazy.
Well, sometimes it's just not in the cards.
You can say that to keep yourself alive.
Right. It's going
to
be okay.
Oh, my God.
Well, I mean, the audition process, too, is like... It's violently
brutal.
Crazy.
It's so different from the job that you're booking.
Yeah.
The audition process is not at all like the job.
Right.
It's a different thing.
Absolutely. And it just got to the point where I was like, wow, this is not fun. I'm not enjoying myself at all. This is very unenjoyable. So then I worked in restaurants, did that whole, as we all do, worked my way up there. And then I missed it. I was like, oh, man, I really miss entertainment. I miss the industry. I don't miss auditioning, and I don't miss acting.
I don't miss anything other than being involved.
In the world. Yeah.
But there's an energy about it.
Right.
It's cool.
Well, not only that, but here's the other thing that the world of entertainment doesn't tell you. It's like when everybody moves here and gets off the bus, they're all dreaming of being the huge famous star or director or writer or producer.
Yeah.
But there's so many careers in entertainment that we never talk about, that we never train on. There's no college. And so honestly, like what I do now, I absolutely fell into it like 10 years ago. And I've just been kind of enjoying the ride ever since.
And you started, what was the first agency that you started at?
First I was actually, this is funny, so I used to work at a restaurant as their banquet sales manager, and I was super bored. So I would sneak out and say that I was like in the field.
I'm checking out banquets.
I know, hey guys, I'm making sure the couple's available for this wedding on this date, you know. And I would go be a gopher for free with casting directors. So I'm getting paid great money.
Smart.
That's nice, because usually the gophers are just broke people that don't have
normal
jobs.
Right? But I had my daughter, you know, so, you know, and I don't know if I had Keaton yet. I didn't have Keaton yet. And I would totally sneak to these places and make copies and be their little person checking people in at auditions and pairing people. And I really enjoyed that. I thought that was very fun.
Oh, I see. I
was
behind the scenes.
Yes, this is fun. And how I got that was through a casting director by the name of Lori Records, who is my mentor, who I love, and she's amazing, and she casts for tons of stuff. She helped me get that foot in the door. And then Melody Lomboy.
Oh, that's a little Melody Arcadia Lomboy. Apaches.
And Arcadia Apaches. Right. She and I kind of found each other on Facebook. She has a talent agency that she's had for over 10 years. It's doing really well. And asked if, if I wanted to, learn the biz kind of a thing. And I'm like, heck yeah, how hard can it be? You know, that's my mantra.
And now you're like, oh my God, what was I thinking?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, so that's what happened. And I just kind of, over the last 8 years, have worked my way.
You know what's awesome about you being an agent? It's like you've seen like every aspect of the other side too. You've done like indie films or like student projects or theater, or you've done auditions. You've seen all of that, and now you're pitching actors and actresses to connect them to that, those dreams. And so you get to see them kind of grow into those, realities to making it happen.
Yeah.
So
you're facilitating. Well, I will say it does help as an agent, having been on the other side of it, because I have the compassion and the empathy.
Yeah.
When an actor is going through something, I'm like, dude, I've been there. I get it.
Right.
The thing that I try to do as an agent now, and I've been at Avalon for 5 years now, is that, I had agents growing up. I had really, really crappy agents. They treated me like shit.
Yeah.
They all would yell at me. They would all tell
me.
Oh my gosh. I had agents that would be like, you get your ass to that audition. My first agent when I was five was Iris Burton. Look her up.
Oh,
Iris
wow.
Burton. She discovered
River
Phoenix.
Yeah.
I mean, the Olsen twins. I mean, you name it. She discovered them. And that was my agent. My mom was afraid of her. And my mom was like a killer.
Yeah.
She was afraid of her. And so when I became an agent, I was like, you know what? I want to be what I never had. I want to be the agent that I always wanted.
Yeah.
And so I'm definitely the actor's agent in the sense that I'm not just like money, 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 money.
Yeah.
I mean, I
that's
am.
Like
and you're like, make a cat.
Don't get me wrong, I am about money.
Like, I've had agents, and I think they don't have a history or background from being an actor. And I think that has not been an issue, but like, you definitely don't empathize with what your client's going through. They just see the client and the job, and you didn't get the job.
On to the next.
On to the next.
What's the matter? We got this bad feedback from this audition. Why can't you do this? But they don't have any idea what happens in that room.
Exactly. Absolutely. And it's scary.
Yeah.
I mean, if you haven't, especially if you're not in class or exercising that muscle, man, you'll go into an audition like a deer in headlights, and you're clammy, and you're like, yeah.
I feel they're all like that, though. It's like,
yes, perhaps maybe a little bit. I think that's human. But I think if you're going to class or, doing improv or constantly working that muscle, you will feel so much better when you go to auditions. Ugh.
And then it's also a lot. I mean, it's the actor's job to go in there and do what they have to do. But like, if you get in there with a casting director and they're just like, they're not giving you anything as like a human being.
Totally.
Then you can that'll affect you.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, this person.
I always picture like auditions, like when Johnny Drama from Entourage walks in, they're like all texting.
Totally.
You know what I mean?
It's true.
But I'm sure that happens all the time.
Oh, that happens all
the time.
Especially if you go to, like, once you go, like, especially in commercial auditions, like if you go to callback, you're sitting there with the casting director and then the clients. And the clients are just have
all
the laptops.
All on their computers.
Oh, my God.
They're not even
really?
Looking at you.
Yeah.
They're not even looking at you.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes they'll look up and be like, oh yeah, okay, great. You're like, oh.
But
good.
Most of the time,
I made them look at me.
they're on the couch in the back, and there's like five laptops on coffee tables, and they're just like.
I'm going to give you.
As an actor, you're just like, oh my God, they just Googled my name.
Right.
That's the only thing you're thinking about.
So that's a whole other thing. You've got to be super careful about your social media, guys.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a huge.
But that's what goes through your head. You're like, oh my God, they all have my name up on Google right now.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I know somebody that lost a job because they went to, it was like a jeans at Levi's or something like that. And they left the audition and said something on their social media that was, oh God, good thing I hate those jeans or something like that. It was like they were going to call them in and like they didn't get the job.
Oh,
you got to be
sucks.
So careful, man.
Yes.
It's like, there's such a fine line because you have to have a huge social media presence nowadays, but you also have to be careful what you say.
Right.
You know?
Well, let me ask you a question. Like for any actors that are listening, How would you prep an actor for an audition if they're going in cold to something? Like, what's the kind of, what's a pointer that you'd be like?
There's so many.
It varies.
That's such an open-ended question. I mean, it could be.
You're like, don't be an asshole.
Done. Actually, well, with commercials, I will say the key is likability and warm and friendly.
Yeah.
You know, it's so funny when these actors for commercials give me these headshots where it's like blue steel, you know, and they'll even email me and go, hey, can you submit me for this job? You know, blah, blah. And I'll look at the breakdown. And it'll be like friendly, likable, warm, and just your best friend that you want to hang out with. You know, and then you look at their headshot and it's all just like this dead killer.
It's black and white.
Right. Totally. And it's like,
yes. It's not going to work.
Connect that. So, I mean, what I will say with commercials is it's mostly improv. So that game has got to be on.
Yeah.
Got to have your improv game on.
I've probably written 20 commercials in auditions and not gotten the job, but I've had a hand in writing that commercial.
Yeah, like, I remember when I wrote that.
That line made it into the commercial.
Well,
and
that's a whole argument with SAG. I mean, that's a whole different world of tags and things like that. But or, you know, cold reading. You know, have your cold read down to a science so you can do that.
How do you have a cold read down to a science? Because
you're it's a technique. It is totally a technique.
Like to me, it's like you're going to walk in and you're not going to know how to.
Yeah, but there's certain tricks.
Normally, you're going to get the script at least 5 minutes. I mean, rarely ever do you go on audition where they're like, you walk in the cast director and like, read this.
Right, it's not like freezing.
Right. It's like you walk into the waiting room.
Even most times you get the night before. There's rarely the occasion.
Don't even get that anymore. I mean, it's really not. There's no sides ever.
So yeah, commercial auditions, no.
Never. It's really no.
It's a scenario, and then
What's like the oddest feedback you've ever gotten from?
You know,
you don't have to say
it. Well, we don't get feedback.
Oh, really?
We do not get
because
feedback.
The volume's too high, right?
You know, commercials are so fast and so quick, and so you know, theatrical jobs, you know, film and TV, you can audition for something and not know the answer for a month, but with commercials, they'll put out a breakdown today, the audition's tomorrow, callback is the following day, and then they're already at the fitting by Friday.
Yeah.
So
that's crazy.
I know. And so for me to call, they saw 150 people, by the way.
Right.
So if I call and go, what'd you think of Michelle?
Yeah.
They're like,
lose our number.
I don't know what the hell you're doing.
Like, yeah, right.
Here's the good news. If you get a callback, they liked you.
Right.
If you're on a bail, they liked you.
Right.
You know, so I did get a call once that an actor was a horrible person in the waiting room.
Oh,
and
really?
So if they call you to say something to you about it's usually going to be negative.
Shit.
Right. But yeah, I have one casting director. Oh, my God, she's so funny. She literally will only call me when one of my actors is late. I'm like, I'm sorry. By the way, can we talk about it? Wait.
You're like, Jenny was doing lines in the waiting room.
So sorry about that. It was very awkward. So, you were saying, oh.
No, because, you know, these are all the things that most actors or artists, like, they don't always get that feedback. And you're like, the funny thing is there's this, like, balancing act that you're doing with casting agents or directors or the creatives and your actors, your clients, where it's like, you know, sometimes you may get negative feedback. And then how do you spin it where it's like, we don't think you suck, but you kind of suck.
Right. If you suck, you know, we know because they'll never call them in again.
Right.
And I've had
even from one audition?
Oh, yeah. For sure. And, you know, I've had casting directors where I've asked, you know, I've said, you know, you never call in so-and-so anymore. You know, what's the scoop on that? And they'll be like, well, let me just tell you something. This person, da-da-da-da-da, and I'll be like, good to know.
Right.
It's very rare, though, and I'll tell you why. It's because I audition everybody that I sign. That should be a given. Like,
yeah.
I feel like.
Well, I'm sure a lot of people don't, though. A lot of people just look at pictures and go.
Right, and personality. If they see personality, which, you know, and I don't necessarily read every single person because if there's somebody that has a million credits, it's almost insulting to have them do a cold read for you.
Right.
Where I've had that, you know, years ago. It's like I still wanted the guy to do a cold read for me, and he looked at me like, are you fucking kidding me right now?
Right. I was doing Othello.
I was doing Othello. I was like, I don't care. The show was canceled 2 years ago. No one cares.
Yeah, yeah.
So I've definitely dealt with all the different clientele of, you know, from casting directors that are the most friendliest and the rudest, and the actors and the friendliest and rudest. But what I've learned from a thief is, you know, you could get your point across without being a total jerk.
Yeah, but that's something, you're the 1% Hollywood that's like that. Because Hollywood's like,
I hound it. And let me tell you, when these casting directors used to call me, they were so mean to me. Oh my God, they were so mean to me. They would cuss me out. They would yell at me. I don't even remember why. And I would just thick skin, keep it cool, don't let them, you know, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And then after a while, and they start booking all my clients on things, then they're like, oh, she's real. Like, I think it's like it's like a wall thing, whatever. They're like testing
you.
It's a rite of passage.
They assume that I'm going to be like a really crappy agent. But then when I'm sending them like really quality talent, you know, then they're like, oh, okay. So yeah, so now we can talk. I'm like, why did we have to start like that?
Right. You can't be cool out of the gate, man.
Why can't we be cool from the beginning?
We can be cool from the beginning,
okay?
We can
be cool from the beginning. But, man, this business is very everybody's size and everybody.
Well, it's also cutthroat. You know,
it's so cutthroat.
And I think, you know what? You said something. Like, you're doing things on the agent side of things in the right way. But can you imagine how many agents are doing things in the wrong way? I mean, I know
tons of agents.
Then
they're not making any money. But then they're broke.
Well, they're just like throwing throwing
spaghetti.
Everything. Yes.
The spaghetti
incident. Let's send the black guy for the white guy role, or the white guy for the black guy role.
See what sticks.
Or the female for the, you know, just like, maybe they'll change their minds. It's like, no, it's target marketing in a sense.
Yeah, no. So I rep about 320 people. That's my thing. That's how I figured out how many names I can remember. Anything after like 350, and an actor walks in my office to be like, knock, knock, hey. And I'm like, oh my God, I don't know that person. And I'm like, you.
I have to drop you.
I know, you.
You're like, I've been with you for 10 years. You're like, really?
That's amazing. So
what have you done?
Right. So like 320 to 350 is kind of my
limit.
That's
a lot of
people that I can remember. And I run the whole department myself. Commercials, print. I do voiceover now. I started doing that.
Wow.
I do, I do anything that's pretty much not a movie or a TV show. And then we have.
Do you have voiceover, like, clients calling you, like, how do you know? Like, they're calling you with accents and stuff.
You know, they don't call me on the phone, but they email me their demos, which is kind of
Do you ever record in a studio in your office?
I do not. No.
So they just do it at home?
Right, so they either do it at their home studio or they'll go to like
VoiceTrack.
VoiceCaster, they'll go to a lot too. But Kathy Kalmanson, who, you know, in Burbank, they actually, when they have voiceover auditions, they actually call you in person to audition.
Yeah, been a couple of
them. And Harvey will give you, you know, some direction and things like that.
I've done somewhere. I just go into my garage and I shut the door and I do it on my iPhone.
Oh, yeah, I've had people.
Wow, really?
And it's clear. It's good.
I've had people get in their car and shut the doors.
That's what you do, yeah.
I mean, it's not ideal.
No, it's not.
But sometimes people are working all day long. They're going to different auditions.
But if you get a call at 10 o'clock going, hey, we need this in the morning, what choice do you have?
You're like, hey, I'm going to do it in my car, you know?
Right.
And they're like, well, you got to, I mean, you don't want to make that a habit.
No.
Like, man, this guy's consistently iPhone recording guy.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard some pretty bad voiceover people, but that's still new. That's still fresh with Avalon. So, no, we don't have an actual booth there, which would be a whole different, whole new.
I imagine if you have a lot of voiceover clients that. It'd be a little obnoxious sometimes to go through like all the different demos of
people. The submission process is so different because with commercials on camera, I look at pictures, and I'm looking at credits and I'll see the role and I'll try to put about 10 people per role. But if you see a voiceover breakdown, you actually got a lift. It's like you're doing a pitch package for every single submission.
Oh my God, that's
for every
crazy.
Single submission. I know, and it's like, it's so time consuming. Yeah, so Ani, who is my amazing right hand, I adore her. She's been with us for 2 years. She's actually taken over a lot of it, and she does most of it now. I mean, we work as a team, but she's the one putting together the pitch packages, mainly because of her freaking speedy time.
Right.
You know, meanwhile I'm like hunt and peck, you know.
And what do you and what do you look for? Like, obviously you want clients that have resumes where they're working, you know.
Right.
But
I'm never taking clients, but I'm always taking clients.
Right. That's like, is that like the agent motto?
Kind
of.
Yeah.
It's like the.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I do showcases a lot.
Yeah.
I do those, you know, a dozen times a year. And I'm looking for holes that I'm missing. So if.
You mean like character actors?
No, like stereotypes. I work in the world of stereotypes.
Yes.
And I work in, you know, the moms, the dads, the, you know, the African-American, ethnically ambiguous, fluent Spanish speakers.
The chubby Indian. Just kidding.
Dude, I seriously need a chubby Indian.
Well, I'm available.
And so I'll go to these showcases. And then if I see, you know, somebody that I need that I don't have, you know, because again, you don't want to do the spaghetti incident.
Right.
So you want to have.
Well, but other agents do. I find that it's awesome that you don't.
I won't name names, but there are some bigger, not bigger agency, like better, bigger, like in terms of like they have 1,200 clients.
Right.
Larger, you know.
It's a numbers game.
It's a numbers game for them. You know, but it's so different nowadays. Like, it's, you know, these casting directors are getting 3,000 submissions for one role. Yeah. And they're calling in 150 people.
And you're just like a little square
half
on
of
a
them
screen.
Are friends. Yeah, you're just a little tiny, itty bitty little thumbnail. So you better damn have other things going for you. You better have TV credits or your social media presence. You better have some comedy. You better know people. I mean, half the people of those 150 people they call in are their friends.
Right.
Let's be honest.
Yeah.
Or their family members. Or
you touched upon something that's actually pretty cool. You said social media presence.
Yeah.
Do you think that's becoming more and more of a role and a factor in auditions?
Hands
and do you
down.
Think that's a good thing, or do you think it's kind of a...
Yeah, I mean, it's a growing thing that we all need to kind of just embrace.
Adapt to.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like with new media, which we were kind of joking about talking about earlier with new media. It's like, what's going on with new media? That's a whole different beast. But with social media, I've had somebody book a job because of his follower. He had more followers than the other person.
They ask now. How many Twitter followers?
Right. That's crazy.
You want to have more than 10,000, which now 10,000 on Twitter isn't even anything at all. And Instagram, it's like samesies, you know? It's like it went from 10,000 to 20,000 to now it's
because you can buy them too.
Right.
But we can tell if you can buy them, and you don't want to do that because they're bots.
Yeah.
And after a while, those bots, you start to lose them.
Yeah.
And they can immediately see that you just paid for it.
Yeah.
And that doesn't look good either.
Yeah.
Right. So you have to organically, unfortunately,
build.
And that's by engaging, and that's, you know, by, you know, retweeting and re-adding and, you know, all that stuff. But honestly, getting auditions is either by that amazing headshot that you had, you know, if you look exactly like what they're looking for, and it's not just like bland, boring blue shirt, you know, it's like you really look like I'm not saying you have like a stethoscope and you're like, you know, I'm a doctor, but like, or you have a resume, or you have, you know, the social media, but you have to have one of those things, you know, and the social media thing, a lot of people have been totally capitalizing on because they don't have TV credits and they don't know anyone.
Oh, that's smart.
And so if you don't have any TV credits and you don't know anyone, any of the casting directors,
you focus on that.
Focus on social media, so then I can use that as my pitch. Because if you have no TV credits, it's so funny when actors are like, did you pitch me on this? And I'm like, you have no credits.
Yeah, yeah. How am I going
to
pitch you?
What do you want me to say? Like, dude, this person's amazing.
Right.
Like, just trust me.
Yeah.
It's like,
can you do that dance? So every time you pitch,
I know it's hard to do radio because I'm a very visual person. Just picture me making a really weird thing with my hands. It's really hard to pitch people if you don't have something to pitch. So you better have a social media presence, or how about a really amazing special skill set that's like, you know, some flipping ping pongy, you know, surfer, you know, that they see all the time in breakdowns, or the languages. Languages is good too.
Now, are you kind of like numb to the rewarding part of this field, where it's like you see when somebody lands something?
No,
because you've
just
seen it.
Excited.
So you every time it's like, oh my god, it's a win! It's a win!
Totally. Every single time somebody books a job, I am just as happy as my first day.
That's awesome.
And we're a family. Like, I feel like my actors are my family now. I try to be the agent I always wanted. These are my family.
Right.
So my turnover rate is really low because I want to get to know these people. And I want to know their families and their personality. And then when I pitch them, because God knows there's so much real casting now where it'll be like, must have a real dog, must have a real
I've gone in conduct. So many just because I have a son. And
Real dad.
So I'll
but
just
you
go
know
in.
What, though? If your agent didn't know that you had a kid, they would totally bypass you on that breakdown. So
that's crazy.
We have to know your personal life in a really weird way to get you out.
You're like, my agent is staying over for dinner every night this week. It's research.
Right. I swear. So,
what are the type of the biggest commercials or the biggest films or TV shows that you've kind of paired some of your clients with, just to give people an idea of,
like, who have I had? Like, I mean, we've done,
you've done a ton.
We've done, like, Geico, Progressive, I mean, Coca-Cola, I mean, you name Snickers. I mean, everything you can think of. Wendy's, McDonald's, Burger King. I mean, every commercial you can think of. Right now, one of my guys, Malcolm, who I love, he's a recurring on The Middle. He is in the new Burger King commercial where they make fun of their pinkies being up eating the burger. Have you seen that one?
Yes.
It's really
fun.
Anyway, that's Malcolm. I love him. I mean, honestly, it's at the point now. I'm not trying to be weird or anything, but it's at the point now where it's like when I watch TV, it's like every other thing or every two or three commercials, you know, and Jason's like, my husband is like, can you really?
can we fast forward through these?
You're
things?
Like, no, wait. I love this commercial. This is my client.
You know what? I do fast forward.
Let me ask you this too. Like, do you ever see a commercial where you think they really made the wrong call with who they picked versus maybe,
yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, where you like maybe one of your clients didn't get the audition, but they choose somebody that you're like, what? Like, you know what I mean?
You know what? Actually, it's more like, oh.
That's what they're going
for.
They
went that way. Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And it's usually something completely different. Totally different than what you were thinking. You're like, oh, wow.
And it's probably different than what they auditioned, too.
Totally.
Because I'll go in and like they always like, the director does not want big. Go small. And then you'll see it on the TV and it's like a cartoon.
Totally.
Wow.
But you go in and you do your set, you're just trying to be as small as possible.
Like, right, I know. It's like you can't win, you know?
No.
And you've got to just get it out of your head to try to figure out what they want.
You just have to do what...
You will never know what they want.
You just have to do what you do, and then hopefully they like it.
You have to be that thing that you walks in the room and they're like, that's it.
Because literally every note you get in a commercial audition is the exact opposite of what you'll see on TV. Just about every single
one. Wow. Yeah, that's frustrating.
Absolutely. And trust me when I say they want you to be the one. They want their day to be over.
Yes.
They want to go home.
Yeah. They wouldn't call you in if they didn't want you there.
Right.
Because there's 1,000 other people they could have in there. Right. Or 4,000
other people. So they're hoping when you walk in that you're the one, you know, and then, you know.
Well, it's also like, you know, like, do you think they size people up too? Like, as soon as they walk through the door, like, oh, no. Even if they're, no matter what their audition is, like, ah, that's just not the look. Do you think that's a big role in part of it?
The casting director
or
the people
in the
room?
Yeah, the cast. Like,
well, no, because the casting director should have known who they called in.
Okay.
That'd be weird if they didn't. Although maybe they took a chance on an agent.
Well, I mean, the headshots also sometimes don't look exactly like...
Well, oh, man, I'll tell you, I had a time where, man, when I was interning, they were doing a Ford models commercial. And this is when I was still working at my first agency. And I learned my lesson the hard way, where I didn't meet all my clients first at my first agency. And this one guy had this amazing hot guy headshot. And his mouth was closed, and he was just super, you know, totally hot.
Jacked up teeth.
So the girls that were casting this Ford, or it was like Oil of Olay, or, you know, one of those commercials, like models, you know. And they're like, well, do you have anyone from your agency? And I was like, I do. I would love to bring in. And here's my pitch. And so he shows up. First of all, he was like 5'5", okay, not 6'2". And he opens his mouth and has the most jacked up teeth.
Oh my God.
And he's like, hey, God, hey, Jeff, how's it going? And I was like, oh.
You're like, oh, no.
You gotta go. And it was the moment of realization years ago that I was like, oh, my God, Steph, never, ever pitch somebody you've never met. That's like agenting 101.
Right.
You know? So after that, man, when I got my job at Avalon, I took 2 weeks and just met 300
Everyone,
people.
Let me see. Smile.
Smile. Okay, turn around. All right, all right.
And
you're out.
And I'd be like, tell me your life story. Go.
Let's talk a little bit about, you've been producing some shows, and you're a founder and executive producer of the Underwire comedy show. Let's talk about this a little bit. This has been a passion project that you've been involved in. Tell us more about it. I'm curious because I don't even know that much about it.
You haven't been yet.
I haven't been yet. But you know what? You sent me a text like maybe like a day before.
I know.
I'm like, oh, what?
I know.
Sometimes you've been like, you didn't come last week. I'm like, well, I didn't even know. Come on. So tell us a little bit about this Underwire comedy show.
So as much as my agenting, I love, I adore, it's my job that I love. The stand-up comedy world is my passion project sort of thing, and it spawned from 2 years ago. I was talking with one of my best friends, shout out Melissa Lewis.
What up, Melissa Lewis? I know Melissa Lewis.
What up, girl squad? And we were talking about female comics, and the Amy Schumer came up, and so this is 2 years ago, so she was still blowing up at the time. Not Trainwreck wasn't out yet, I think. And I was, you know, she was saying how funny she was, and I was like, I don't think she's all funny. I'm sorry. I don't.
And he's a stand-up comedian. He sometimes shares that opinion,
okay,
too.
Okay, so I'd be really interested to hear your commentary on this because her and I, we got in this debate.
Yeah.
And I said to her, I go, okay, let's play a game. Let's find girl comics, female comics, and they cannot talk about their dating life, their vagina, or anything about sex, their sexuality. Let's see if we can find anyone. And I'm telling you.
It's hard to do. That's
it
hard.
It's really
hard
to do. Freaking
yeah,
hard
it's hard to,
find.
To do.
And it became this like, we were like, oh my God, we're kind of onto something. Now, full disclosure, there are a ton of amazing female comics out there that do not talk anything about that. the problem is we can't find them, and they're not being promoted. Yeah. And so, you know, I used to be a comedy, you know, I used to hang out at the Improv as like a barfly years ago, you know, that was my dating life, you know, when I was single, I'd, you know, hang out at the Improv and date comics, you know. And it's my life. It's what I love. It's what I, you know, that's my passion is comedy. And What was I talking about?
Talking about the Underwater Comedy Show.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Sorry.
dating comics.
Yeah, I know. You went down a dark hole.
I totally started thinking about this one comic I was dating, and he was like really crazy. He was this like crazy guy. Sorry. Okay. Underwire. So that's when we decided let's try to figure out if we can create a show where we promote female comics. And, you know, when we go to all these comedy shows to try to do some, you know, recon, we would see there's always six or seven guys, yeah, always, and one girl, always. That's just the way it is.
It's getting better. It's getting a lot better.
But there'd be one,
I mean, now
girl.
It's two or three. Right. But, I mean, it's not getting that much better.
There's not enough. And so when the girls would get up on stage, I swear to you, they would get up on stage, and the first line would be, so I'm dating this guy. And I'm like, really, girls? Really? We've got more than this. You know, meanwhile, then the next thing is a guy gets up on stage and is like, so I saw a cop got ran over by, and I'm like, now why don't girls say that same joke? That same joke, you know, it's like for some reason women have this feeling that if we're not talking about our dating, our sex, or
well, they just feel like it's what they're identified with, and that's the way they can relate to an audience is that way.
But you know what's weird though is that when we said, okay, don't talk about that, they immediately went to their bodies and immediately talked about how ugly they were or how fat they were. Mm. And it was like, stop it, just talk about anything
funny.
Else.
Just be funny
just
about
anything.
Observing things.
Observing or do impressions or, you know, whatever. So it became.
I always wonder why there's never a physical female comedian. There's hardly ever any physical female comedians.
I know.
Ever.
I know.
Well, Gilda Radner was like that.
Yeah,
well,
but I mean, there's so few physical
Carol
female
Burnett,
comedians.
I mean, Lucille Ball. I mean, I'm just these women.
They're just not around.
Physical comedy, right? Well, here's what we're learning. They are around. They are out there. These girls are totally out there. And so I am here solely and only for Underwire to get them noticed and
That's
to get
awesome.
Their name out there. So we do these shows, and we do different girls each show. And we've done...
Easy there.
I know. I do girls every show. It's amazing. So
where are the shows?
We've done the main stage at the Improv. We've done the main stage at the Comedy Store. We've done West Side Comedy Theater. And we usually have anywhere from 6 to 10 girls, but it's more of a variety show. I want to add music. I add video.
Yeah.
I have one show. I had two hosts, girls that were kind of like trying to do like a banter, Key and Peele kind of a thing, you know, to make it more of a variety show. So it's not just 10 comics because you get tired of laughing.
No.
You know.
Well, you get tired of bad comics fast.
For sure.
You know what I mean? But it's also like you want the variety.
Right.
Yeah.
So for these shows, it is right now a non-profitable right now because what we're doing is we're charging a little bit more than normal. You know, you go to these comedy shows and it's like $5-$10. We charge anywhere from 20 to 40. But what we do with our money is half of it, we do a proceed that we care a lot about and we stand behind. So we've done Planned Parenthood, ACLU, the LA Division.
That's cool.
We did the Pulse Family Victims of Orlando shooting. We did...
Do you choose something every show?
We choose something every show that seems
awesome.
To be a little...
Very cool.
We'll pick something that seems to be a little bit relevant at the time.
Yeah.
You know, God, right before the Pulse shooting, we were doing the Humane Society. And then the day before it happened, and we were like
okay,
fuck
we
that.
Like,
let's just help the families. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and the other half of our entire... Like, we spend money, and our entire other half of the money, we pay the comics.
That's unusual.
And
that's awesome.
And we pay them well. I think so. And so... it brings
good for you.
It brings quality,
and
I want people to talk about it, and I want people to share it, and hopefully, I think our next show is going to be in the fall. I think we're going to do New York.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how often do you do them? You do them once every couple
a year.
Months?
Yeah, it's a quarterly thing, just because we all have jobs.
We're in New York, Gotham, or
maybe we talked about Gotham.
Gotham's a nice club.
Yeah. There's one club that one of the producers was talking about that. You know who played Mr. Big on Sex and the City?
Yeah.
He has a jazz club.
Oh, really?
But it's also a comedy club that
Cutting Room? Is that it?
I don't know. I guess a lot of people are doing comedy there now.
I'm not too familiar with a lot of the New York clubs. I know a handful of them, but yeah. I don't know.
So one of our producers, she does the New York comedy scene, so we're like, well, let's take it on the road.
Yeah.
And who knows what'll happen with this, you know? I mean,
no, but that's how you build. That's totally. How, I mean, you know, being in a band, that's you build. I like building things in the same way that you probably do, too.
Absolutely. And so, we all have a million jobs.
That's awesome. So how many comedians do you usually do, or how many variety acts are on in one show, and how long is it?
So the show's usually an hour and a half. Okay. I think anything more than an hour and a half, and you start to lose people.
Yeah.
And we try to do one or two music acts. In fact, our first show, we had a music act by the name girl Jackie Tone, who is now a regular on the show Glow.
Oh,
do you watch
awesome.
Glow? Have you seen it?
I've heard so much about this show, the Ladies Wrestling.
She's got a great role in it for the first season.
That's awesome.
I know. And we have another girl that got on the list of 20 next female comics that are about to blow up. I mean, our comics are like really blowing up.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So,
and you're doing a good thing. Like, we talk about this with Eddie a lot about the comedy world, how it's weird. It's a really kind of a shady world.
It is totally shady.
Especially for comedians. And it's like, you know, he was explaining a lot, like, the world, you know, you can't really practice. Your practice is the performance, and you whittle it down, and then you spend all this time going, you know, parking and spending time with these clubs for like 5 minutes. Or
totally.
Like, and then you don't make money. And
they
it's
all
just
jump
like,
from club to club in the same
night. Yeah.
For sure. It's hard. I can only imagine. And I have so much compassion for them, for sure. I'm like, oh, gosh.
That's amazing.
And then they don't
this.
Get paid.
Right. That's what
that.
I mean. That's what we like. Unless you're doing an out-of-town show that's under the radar, the big city shows, usually a lot of comedians don't get paid. And it's, you know, we actually feature a lot of comedians on here. We talk about that and just like the different, you know, kind of influences or people that kind of went through that road too.
Yeah.
So you're doing amazing thing for comedians.
Oh, thank you. Well, I'm very proud of them. And, you know, I will say the one challenge that I've faced with being a agent and also being a producer of female comics, I want to get them, of course, you know, as much as possible on TV and get them out there. But casting directors oftentimes do not call in stand-up comics. And when I asked a casting director, I mean, they would not touch him with a 10-foot pole.
Why?
And I was like, why are you not calling in these stand-up comics that are, like, fantastic, you know? And they were saying that the generalization is that they don't have an acting background. So
that's such crap.
I know. And so, you know, unfortunately, comics have such to show crap. Their acting background in order to get an audition for a commercial. I know that sounds weird.
No, it
doesn't. But if you just have a whole list of comedy shows that you do, it's like they're like, yeah, oh, they're not actors. You know?
Look at Dwayne Johnson. I mean, his background was the WWF. That's his acting background. I mean, really, it's like
there are those
anomalies that kind of poke through.
But again, that's coming from that side we were talking about earlier, where it's like if you weren't in the business as an actor or performer, then you just have that one-sided view of like, oh, you're a comic, you don't act. Mm-hmm. But like as an actress, you know, like a stand-up comic can act.
I've seen comics that can't act.
There are comics, and I've seen actors who can't.
Totally.
Absolutely. But it's like, but like I think someone coming from the other side of it who was an actor knows that the performance part on stage, you know, they have the chops to do that. Whereas someone who was just an agent or a casting director and had never had the experience on the other side, they tend to categorize a lot.
Totally, totally. Although then you think about the stand-up comics that have their characters that they do, but that's all that they know, and then they give them a show, but then they can't really go from there. It's like that's all. It's like just that.
Like I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah. So that is one thing that I'm learning on that side of it, because the actors that go out the most on my roster are my improv and sketch comedy people.
Well, because they're confident in the.
Their like, improv is just. Yes. I mean, come on, you know. And so that world with IOS and UCB and Second City and Groundlings, that world is, has blown up in the last 15 years. When I came back from college, IOS and UCB were not even really big yet. I mean, it was like 2001, and I think IOS, wasn't that like 2005?
I was at IOS in 98 when it used to be on Santa Monica Boulevard. Then they moved to Hollywood Boulevard 2002.
Right.
And then UCB didn't come up until out here until 2006, 2005, 2006.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah, exactly.
And then it just exploded.
And I remember when they literally were like, Improv Olympics was like what they would call it, you know? And you're like, what is the Olympics of improv, you know?
Right.
And now it's just so like, you know.
It's like, oh, it's improv.
Well, the Olympic Committee made them stop.
Right.
They did.
They did.
Really?
Yeah.
No way.
So they had to go by. It started from Second City, then Del Close, it sprung off, and they they had this other long-form improv thing called Improv Olympic, where it was more long-form, more character-based, more relationship-based with the improv. And then it came out here as Improv Olympic West. But then just a matter of like 5-6 years ago, the Olympic Committee was like, you can't call the Olympics anymore.
Right, right.
And so they started just going by I.O.
Right.
Huh.
And they blew up because I think Second City was more improv to end up being sketch. You know, but
yeah. They used improv as a method to get to sketch.
Right, exactly. But I.O. is improv is it. That's, yeah. That's the answer.
And UCB is an offshoot from improv. Like, right. The UCB people, Besser and Amy Poehler, they came from I.O. and the Del Close School of...
We had one
the
of the
show is improv.
UCB on here. As
oh, you
guest.
Did? Who? Mm-hmm.
Eddie, what was his name?
Matt Besser.
Matt Besser, that's
oh, cool.
Right. I was going to say
nice.
Besser, but I was like...
Besser.
Was
nice.
Besser.
Yeah, I mean, comedy is my thing. And I think that's why commercials work for me, because commercials are all... really comedy, quite yeah. honestly. I mean, it's very rarely that we get...
And an audition, essentially, is improv.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, we get the serious ones every once in a while for, like, you know, SimbaCore, you know, but it's
like, That but sounds fun.
I know, but, you know, it's like, but other than
but
that...
But even in that one, you're just kind of just, like, looking away.
Right.
You're
not even, like,
you don't have to say anything. You're
right,
just kind of
right,
like,
right. You know what? I mean, hey, $40,000.
Yeah, no, but yeah, there's nothing. Yeah. They're easier than the comedy auditions, because you don't... They want nothing in those auditions.
Right, absolutely nothing.
Well, let me ask you this real quick. Where can people find you if they want to get involved with the Underwire comedy show or submit to you, your agency, or anything like that? How can people contact
you? Okay, so Avalon, we take hard copy submissions still, which is crazy. We open everything and email.
That's awesome.
I know, isn't that crazy? Yeah, that's
crazy.
Like straight out of 2002. I like it.
It's like an envelope. And email, so it's my first name, Stephanie, Stephany, at Avalon Artists, with an S.
Spell that, because people are dumb.
Ah, crap. Avalonartists.
ISDS.
Oh, crap. Don't make me say the alphabet. .com.
Okay.
And then Underwire, you know, I think it's UnderwireComedy at Gmail, but people find me a lot on Twitter. I know that sounds weird.
That's awesome.
People find me a lot on Twitter.
And what is your Twitter?
Story Films.
Okay, perfect. StoreyFilms.
Which is my maiden name is my last name, Story Films. I don't know why I had that for so long. But I think
that was like your email from like 1998.
I know, like AOL, I know. And then, but my Twitter, I think, is Avalon Agent Steph, but it's Story Films. And yeah, if you're out there listening and you're a female comic, reach out. I'd love to
bring it.
Bring it.
It's already been brought in.
I know. We're trying to figure it out and find y'all. And if you're an actor looking for commercial or print rep, bring it on.
Don't submit. Leave me alone.
Steph, you've been an awesome, awesome guest. And we'd like to have you back. And
sure.
Thank you for, you know, sharing Ja knowledge.
Ja knowledge.
Because this is a world that, you know, it is cutthroat and it's crazy and it's a circus and... You know what? You kind of answered a lot of questions that people are probably wondering out.
Well, let me tell
there.
You, people pay for me to answer these questions.
That's right.
So
see
I just
that?
Get free
Top dollar.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Casting seminar.
That's
Seriously,
right.
Seriously, it's like these people pay to ask these questions, and it's like, you know, if you do these every once in a while, it's like,
eh. You're like, hey, well, hi, Eddie. How do you doing? Well, thank you for coming and taking time out of your day. Eddie,
yeah.
It's good to have you back.
Yeah, it's good to be back.
We'll see you guys here next week.
Bye.